Only for a while. People travel to work now, intent on their journey. Or others go home, or to the taverns, where water isn't their prime concern. Also, I find that information is at its driest at this time of day.
I expect you're filling and resealing the bottles, too, eh?
Tree asked. Max Hagen looked genuinely hurt.
You doubt my product?
Tree didn't answer.
Other water merchants come and go. They fill bottles from poisoned springs in the caves below Greenwood Station, drop in a few purifying tablets, seal them up, sell them as pure. None of them last long. That's why I'm still here, selling purity after 4 years. That's why they always come back to me.
Everyone buys their water from you? Lannery asked.
Everyone that matters,
Max Hagen said. His face dropped abruptly.
But that's enough about water. Follow me.
He turned and pushed his way through curtains at the back of his stall, and Lannery and Tree had to climb over the tables to follow. He led them across the busy square toward a doorway in one corner. At first she thought he was taking them down into one of his opulent rooms again, but then she heard the sounds of revelry and smelled spilled drink and spiced food. When Max Hagen entered the tavern, only a few inquisitive eyes turned their way. Most lingered more on Lannery than the water seller, and she kept the hood of her robe raised. She could never shake the feeling that her Jedi heritage was easy to see.
In the corner, round table,
Max Hagen said.
I'll bring drinks.
We're not thirsty, Lannery said.
But I am.
He shoved his way toward the bar, and Lannery scanned the tavern. It was filled with workers, their jobs sometimes apparent, sometimes not. All manner of people, species, creeds. None appeared to be armed. She glanced at Tree, pleased that he'd concealed his blaster well. By the time she'd examined the corner booth to make sure it appeared safe, Max Hagen was with them again. He must have had his bodyguards. But Lannery was slightly disturbed that she could not make them out in the crowd. Did you find him? She asked.
Your brother? Yes.
He took a huge drink from an opaque glass. Where is he? Still on Nox?
No,
Max Hagen said. Lannery's spirits slumped, but she kept her eyes on Max Hagen. Inside, he was laughing, playing with her.
He's not on Nox. He's aside from it. In a place that in diplomatic terms is not here at all.
Explain, she said.
You're young for a ranger, aren't you?
He sat back on the bench and relaxed, resting his hands on his ample stomach. It was the fact that he made his smile touch his eyes that troubled Lannery the most. Not particularly. And what has my age got to do with anything?
Young Jedi often don't know as much as older Jedi. They're not told as much. Secrets have a way of being passed down. I should know. I deal in secrets.
Lannery drank, taking the opportunity to look around the noisy, smoky tavern. She didn't like Max Hagen using the word Jedi so much, but no one seemed to be listening. Her force senses alert, the irony that both men she sat with were shielded from her was obvious.
Your brother is visiting a place that still sometimes carries out commissions for your people. It's called Pan Deep. It's in the base of the central tower, in its roots, its oldest foundations. Close enough to the surface to benefit from Greenwood Station's life support systems and infrastructure, but deep enough to survive when the Jedi bombed us during the war. Closed off enough to be, somewhere else.
I've never heard of... Lannery began.
Of course not. It's a secret. But don't you wonder why Greenwood Station only suffered a flesh wound? The domes around were reduced to nothing. The people fried or crushed or blasted. But here...
He raised a hand as if indicating the ruptured dome, repaired now, where a Jedi attack had scooped out a small portion of the city. So how do I get there? What does this place do? She asked, but she already knew. Dale was having his device built there. A sense of urgency took her, and she calmed her excitement.
High-end tech stuff,
Max Hagen said.
Very high. Military. Sometimes beyond. really advanced science that I can't even be bothered to try to understand.
He smoothed a hand back over his bald head and passed his ear, smiling softly.
I've used the place myself on occasion. I have an interest in it, and even more of an interest in those who would use it.
He's there now? Lannery asked. With his stargazers?
He landed 2 days ago, and his ship is still in the spaceport outside the city. But I don't know how many people landed with him.
Tell us how to get into Pandeep, Lannery said.
You're that desperate to speak with your brother, Lannery? And Tree, you're that eager to help?
Yes and yes, Tree said, answering for both of them.
Max Hagen glanced aside, and for the first time, Lannery saw movement across the tavern that sparked her senses. Two human men, short but strong, and neither seemed to be paying their drinks any attention. They stared down at the table where they sat, concentrating, listening, the glint of metal in their ears. Lannery leaned across the table, pleased to see Max Hagen pull back. You know who and what I am, she said. You might mock my youth, but you're an older man who's survived all these years doing what you do. That's because you're wise. You court safety. So you'll know not to mess with a Jedi, Max Hagen. We've paid you for information which is gratefully received. So now we'll be on our way. Max Hagen's smile remained on his lips, but faded from his eyes.
Are you threatening me?
Yes. With the three of them frozen that way, Lannery ranged her senses out across the tavern. The two men, staring at the table. A Wookiee at the bar. A Zabrak just outside the door. A triple-barreled blaster concealed in her backpack but within easy reach. Three Nogri laughing uproariously in another corner. Blades tied to their legs. Claws equipped with artificial poison sacks. All Max Hagen's people. All watching her. If things went wrong, it would be a bloodbath. And Lannery did not have time to be killing.
Nice doing business with you,
Max Hagen said, grinning. He pushed a small memory pod across the table, holding out his hand, palm up. Lannery swept up the pod, and against all her instincts, she shook his hand.
Good luck.
I don't rely on luck, Lannery said. She left the tavern without looking back, sensing Tree behind her all the way. Eyes followed them out. They passed the Zabrak waiting outside, and Lannery nodded at her.
He could have told us more, Tree said as they walked back across the square. You're not expecting there to be much on that pod, are you?
There was plenty he wasn't telling us, Lannery said. But the place will be easy to find. Trust me. As she walked, making sure they weren't followed, she slipped the pod into her wrist computer and accessed the Peacemaker's main computer. She instructed it to read the pod, carefully and with full protective protocol in case Max Hagen had tried to pass on a parasite, and search for construction plans of Greenwood Station. Come on, no time to waste. She imagined her parents' faces were she to tell them that Dale was still alive, and she remembered their expressions the one time she had gone home since becoming a ranger, as if they had lost her as well. Lannery could not breathe a word of this to her mother and father until it was over. And even then, she would only tell them if everything ended well. If she had to kill Dale, that secret would follow her to the grave. The ship located the newest construction plans it could find for Greenwood Station's central core and transmitted them to Lannery's wrist unit. As the midnight siren sounded across the dome, Lannery and Tree entered an abandoned warehouse in District 4. They were very close to the central column here, and looking up, Lannery could see the countless lights belonging to those who lived there. So many up there profited from what lay below, but that was always the case. The ruling classes always set themselves higher. From the plans, Lannery could see that the subterranean Greenwood Station was not a quiet place. The foundations of the newer city were made from old, tumbled buildings of the past. There were artificial structures deep underground, their uses not always obvious. There were also transport routes, massive tunnels carved into the city's substructure, along which the largest of its products were transported to its spaceport ready for export. Along with life support systems, water reservoirs, waste management plants, power centers, and storage facilities, the city was almost as expansive below ground as it was above. But the place she sought, Pan Deep, was not actually that far below the rest of Greenwood Station. What set it apart was that it was built within the central tower's deep foundations. It took some time to negotiate their way through the first subterranean level toward the tower. Lannery sought to keep their movements covert. She was already uncomfortable that Max Haugen knew their destination, and certain that he had withheld information from them. But she'd grown weary of his games. She was sure he was a consummate liar, but she had to assume he was telling the truth about Dale and Pan Deep. It certainly fit what she knew her brother was attempting, and that was something that, she hoped, Max Haugen could not know. The descent from the warehouse was down an old, rarely used spiral staircase, their feet clanging on metal treads, glow rods making shadows dance. Lannery recalled all her training at Qigong Kesh, craving the peace of that silent desert as she cast her senses out and around them. She smelled for danger, listened for held breaths, searched the deep shadows with force-enhanced sight, and if her mind touched one other mind intent on violence, she would know. After a while, they reached a long, winding tunnel that led toward the tower. She flicked on her glow rod. Just as she judged that they were beneath the central core of the tower, the tunnel opened out into an excavated cavern, a massive place with a floor sloping in from all sides toward a sinkhole in the middle.
"Oh,"
Tree said.
"Oh!"
He pressed a hand over his nose in disgust, and Lannery could only agree. They'd been smelling the rank tang of sewage for a while, but actually seeing this place seemed to make everything so much worse. The effluent of the whole tower flowed here. Perhaps 10,000 people of a dozen species, all venting their waste into toilets and disposal units in dwellings and offices, taverns and restaurants. Rainwater already stinking with pollutants was used to flush, and now they could see the resultant rain of shack showering down from the high ceiling. Countless pipes and gullies led here, their stinking contents falling in blessed darkness to splash onto the floor. And the floor was moving, a thick stew of repulsiveness flowing slowly down the slope toward the large hole in the cavern's center. From there, Lannery guessed it fell into an underground lake or a deep fault in the planet's crust. Thousands of years of a city's refuse rotting in the darkness.
"You bring me to the nicest places,"
Tree said. Lannery didn't reply, because that would have meant opening her mouth. She consulted her wrist computer one more time, then switched it off. The plans were of no use to them now. Pan Deep was somewhere not shown on the schematics, and she thought she knew how to find it. Tapping Tree's shoulder, she pointed around the perimeter of the massive cavern with the glow rod.
"You want to walk around there?"
he asked. Lannery nodded and moved on. She had already seen the overhang at the left, the space beneath protected from anything falling from above. It led to the entrance of a corridor hidden behind a projection in the wall, and once inside, the floor immediately sloped upward. She paused. Tree almost walked into her.
"What?"
he asked. "This is a hidden place, not on the plans. Might not be the right place, but I'll soon know. Give me a moment." She tried to relax, closing her eyes and breathing deeply, letting the force flow. In moments, the stink was gone, her senses cleansed and purified by the force, ready for what she sought.
"What are you looking for?"
Tree asked. "Energy source." She cast her senses outward. It was a dark place, heavy with the weight of Greenwood Station's central tower above and the many people who lived there. The air itself seemed to carry a taint of wrongness. Perhaps it was because of the city's military manufacturing, but she thought it more like a trace from the minds of those who worked and lived there. She had seen many people, and all of them seemed to be constantly moving or talking or eating and drinking. Few stood still for a moment simply to muse upon their lives. Perhaps to do so would be to admit the awful truth of their existence. Lannery shivered. Nox was long known to be a planet out of balance, and here more than anywhere. She delved beyond that shadowy trace and searched for power. In the tower above, there were countless sources, but down here, there were only a few weak, old generators winding down. And then she encountered a dark void of heavy shielding. She probed deeper, pushing hard, and her force senses forged through. Bright light. Heavy potential. Staggering power. "This way," she said. "We're going up again, but not too far." More corridors, and every step took them farther away from the stink. They'd been moving for some time, and Lannery was hungry and thirsty. But she was also excited. The last time she'd been this close to Dale had been on that dreadful, painful morning at Anil Kesh. "Here," she said. The tunnel they were moving along had rough walls and an uneven floor, but up ahead, she could see a steady glow. And nearby, the gutter thoughts of a violent man. She flicked off her glow rod. Darkness fell, but it was not complete. She grabbed Tree's arm and pulled him close, breathing against his ear. "Guards." Drawing her sword, she moved forward. Tree came behind her, blaster in hand. Her heart beat fast. She touched the guard's mind again, wincing back from his thoughts of violence, and only at the last instant did she realize her mistake. His thoughts had been a screen, a ploy. And as the blaster fire erupted, she touched his real mind and the visions of starlit triumph that burned within. Lannery flowed, and the force flowed through her. Movement and reality slowed, yet she moved with it, her perceptions and reactions enhanced. She swept her sword around and deflected two laser blasts and advanced quickly. The man crouched behind a column attached to the tunnel's side. He wore a loose robe, similar to those of the Daibendu monks, but any semblance of holiness was wrecked by the weapon in his hand and the fury she sensed in him. A shot came from behind her and impacted the wall far along the tunnel, smashing rock into dust and blasting a flash of fire along its length. In that light, Lannery saw more figures rushing their way. Time was short. "I won't lose him again," she thought, and in three leaps, sword sweeping aside laser blasts meant for her chest, she was on the man. She saw a moment of fear in his eyes, and then she parted his head from his shoulders, crouching and facing the approaching stargazers, even as she felt blood splash across her neck. Tree scurried along the tunnel and pressed himself to the wall opposite her, aiming and firing his blaster along its length. A grunt, the sound of an impact, and then a woman started screaming. "Wait here," Lannery said. "But..." She did not pause to answer his rebuttal, instead running forward with her bloodied sword raised before her. She force-shoved ahead and heard three voices cry out as their owners were flung back. A blast sizzled past her ear, and she smelled burned hair, scorched clothing. That was good.
"The Force gives you power, and power breeds confidence,"
Master Kinnaid had told her at Stav Kesh.
"But confidence can be your enemy."
Lannery was never one to forget her mortality. Tree fired past her, keeping their attackers' heads down as she closed the distance between them. "Don't discount the injured one on the ground," she thought. And then she was among them, slashing left and opening a Nogri woman from throat to sternum, ducking and rolling, standing, thrusting to her right and catching a man beneath the arm. He cried out and stumbled sideways, her sword jammed between his ribs. He fell. As she was pulled forward, he turned, tearing blade through more flesh, bones cracking, to point his blaster at her face. Lannery clenched her left hand and aimed a force punch, sending the blaster spinning away. Two of the man's fingers were still clasped around the grip. He slumped away from her, dying, and she stood on his hip to withdraw her sword. A blast from behind her and a brief, gurgled cry. She spun around. The injured woman was slumped against the stone wall, her throat and lower jaw an open wound, raw edges still sizzling from the laser blast that had killed her. 10 paces along the corridor, Tree lowered his weapon.
She was almost on you.
Lannery nodded her thanks. That was too close. Clumsy, she thought. But now was not the time to analyze her mistake.
So now they know we're here,
Tree said. I think they've known for a while. Come on. They trotted along the tunnel, Lannery casting her senses forward and around them. The flurry of terrible violence had set her heart pounding and blood rushing, and her pulse filled her ears. She knew control and carried the talents to calm herself, but she also knew that the heightened awareness of the fight could be her friend. The Force complimented her. She was her own greatest weapon. They ducked through a doorway, climbed a flight of stairs, and suddenly the stone wall disappeared, and a metal corridor began. She probed ahead, but her vision was clouded now, her Force senses blurred. Pan Deep might sometimes serve the Jedi, if Max Hagen was to be believed, but it also strove to protect itself from them. She ran on. To slow down now, to take stock, would be to lose whatever advantage they still possessed. The fighting would have been heard, and perhaps Dale and his remaining stargazers would not have expected her to win through so quickly. The confusion of combat would work to her advantage. Through another doorway, and then there was a room. Behind her, Tree gasped. The room was large. Its walls were smooth, their lines clean. The ceiling and floor were white, like nothing they had previously seen on Nox. It resembled more the interior of a luxury spacecraft than a subterranean manufacturing base. At its center stood a wide table, upon which rested an object swathed in a loose white sheet. Scattered across the table were instruments and components, and around the room were several wheeled cabinets, home to more tools, parts, and obscure technology. It was more like an operating theater than a laboratory. Huddled in one corner were 6 Cellcaths dressed in plain white lab coats, all of them terrified. And standing beside the table, Dale. Lannery, he said. His surprise was evident in his eyes, and the way he threw up his hands. And as he grinned, she was a teenager again, seeing her brother and reveling in his presence. A flush of emotion swept through her, pleasure and sadness, loss and love. He came forward as if delighted at her being there, and for a moment Lannery was consumed by memory. And that was the only moment her lost brother required. Tree screamed, and something struck Lannery's head. As she saw the floor rising to meet her, darkness swallowed her.
Chapter 13. Other Ways. Alchemy should have no part in a Jedi's experience. It is a dark force, arcane and dangerous. It has the power to upset balance. There are other ways.
Temple Master Vordona, 10,456 TYA, so your arrival. At Onil Kesh, Lannery finds herself, without even realizing that she was lost. Their first few days there are strange. There is an orientation process to go through because of the disruptive influence of the chasm below the temple, and Lannery becomes immersed in the talks, meditations, and instruction. She and several other journeyers spend their time in darkened, windowless rooms, away from any sight of the chasm, and a Sith master guides them through varying stages of sickness and uncertainty. The Sith is a wise old man, and he has done this many times before. He sees their discomfort fade, not lessening, because the chasm will always affect anyone strong in the Force, but simply tempered. And in his wisdom, he perceives that Dale is enjoying all this. Lannery's brother says very little over those first few days at the temple, but he exudes a sense of peace that she has not seen in him before. He enjoys witnessing his sister and the other journeyers suffering. They are given several tours of the Onil Kesh temple,
which is even larger and more incredible than Lannery thought. Each of its three giant support legs houses a complex honeycomb of living quarters, the structures designed to afford as much strength as possible to the supports. Within the legs are dampeners the size of cloud chasers, designed to absorb the incredible pressures placed on the temple by frequent and violent storms originating in the chasm. Huge tanks of pneumatic fluid are stored at regular intervals, and there are also several access ports in each leg for escape craft. None has ever been used, and their tour guide assures them that none are needed. Everything here is large and amazing, the architectural and engineering talent on display, awe-inspiring. Their guide seems to take some satisfaction in this. The massive central body of the temple is supported by these legs, hanging directly above the chasm. And floating around the temple itself, the Thoyor. Hanging by means unknown, it drifts around Anil Kesh, so it is believed, in tune with the Force. This central area is the heart of Anil Kesh. There are several large laboratories here, along with teaching rooms, private studies for temple masters, libraries, hollow suites, and meditation chambers. There are also launch bays from which drones and other equipment are sometimes dropped into the chasm. Lannery is surprised to learn how infrequently this now happens. Every experiment that could safely be carried out on the chasm has already been performed countless times, and still so little is known about the bottomless gorge. Future discoveries, they are told, must arise from more esoteric means. Yet a blazing, pulsing beam of energy is still fired down into the chasm from the very heart of Anil Kesh, seeking information and readings. On the fourth day, the Sith Master frees them from his instruction and tells them that their new masters will be introducing themselves that evening. The rest of the day is their own.
"I'm going to look at it," Lannery tells Dale. "I'm going outside to see."
She means the chasm. Even uttering those words causes a flutter of trepidation and excitement in her stomach. She is about to confront something that is still a mystery to even the greatest Jedi, and she wants to do so with her brother. But it's too late.
"It's nothing, really," he says matter-of-factly. "Deep, stormy. I've been out there 4 times a day since we've been here. I'm more interested in the temple than the chasm, though. Have you seen how long the temple legs are? Have you felt how much it flexes in the wind?"
He is toying with her, and he knows that she knows. But he doesn't care. His vision is elsewhere now, always. And soon, something is going to happen. Maybe one day she'll wake up, Dale will be gone, and she'll never see him again. Or perhaps it will be worse than that.
"I'm going to look at it,"
she says again, and as she pushes past Dale, she feels rather than sees his silent chuckle. There are steps that lead up onto a gangway and outside. The heavy metal doors are always kept locked on the inside, as though something from beyond might wish to gain entry. But the dangers are far less physical. She spins the locking handle on a door, and it swings inward. The blast of air is shocking. Loaded with warm raindrops, gushing against her like the breath of an unimaginable monster, it carries the smell of something mysterious and deep. Rain patters across the floor and spreads inside, and Lannery feels a moment of panic. What has she let in? She makes a quick decision and steps outside, pulling the door closed behind her. Above her arcs one of the three great curving arms of the temple. They act both as counterbalances to the legs, and also as transmitters and receivers, gathering atmospheric charge to fuel Anil Kesh's experiments, and sending out messages from the temple masters to other Jedi across Tython and beyond. Its mass shelters her somewhat from the storms. But she can still look down. She walks to the edge of the wide viewing platform and grips the railing. She feels the weight of Anil Kesh behind her, and the protective arms seem to hold her within their shadowy grasp. The temple feels on the breath of the chasm, and its sturdy legs absorb every subtle impact of the wind.
"You always move, seeking to draw my eyes," she says.
It is a line from a love poem she once read in an old paper book of her mother's, and she wonders, whether the poet had ever visited this place. Looking down, she wonders whether all Jedi are in love with the chasm. It is mystery. It is depth and infinity on the surface of this world they deign to call their home. Its breath is warm and loaded, and deeper down through the mist of torrential rain, she can see the frequent flash of Force lightning, erupting in the darkness and illuminating nothing. It is dizzying and thrilling, terrifying and wonderful. She grips the railing so hard that her fingers hurt and her knuckles turn white, not sure she can ever let go. There is a brief, ecstatic moment when she is tempted to lift herself over the railing and fall. It will end in death, but she will also get to see the chasm's depth, to know its secrets. It cannot be bottomless. They only say that because no Jedi has reached its bottom and lived. Or none have gone down there and returned, she whispers, the words immediately stolen by the wind. She is drenched through by the rain. The storm whips curtains of water back and forth across the chasm below her. She feels a hand on her shoulder and instantly fears it is Dale come to do her harm.
I am the chasm, he said,
perhaps meaning that he is a mystery to her now, with a mind that no Jedi will ever be able to fully understand. Lannery freezes. She cannot fight back because she is too shocked and too overcome with a sense of infinity. But then a warm voice says,
Come inside, Lannery, where we can begin our talk.
That first meeting with Master Dan Powell extends long into the night.
I told you to never get in my way.
Darkness. Pain. She heard her own ragged breathing, felt the troubled beating of her heart. Her head throbbed and pulsed, the core of a raging sun in the center of her brain. And she knew that voice.
I never thought they'd send you after me.
She opened her eyes, but the brightness hurt. She closed them. The pain was a weight crushing every part of her. Her scalp was wet and warm, and everything was red. Normally a calm sea, the force within her was now a raging river of confused currents.
I thought they'd have more sense.
Dale, she thought, and tried to sit up. Someone helped.
That surprised her, but she was already gathering her senses.
Stay like this. Be weak. Be wounded.
I knew you were onto me on Kalamar.
How?
Her voice echoed and thumped in her head, pounding her skull, but she could not help asking the question. Dale did not answer.
Didn't think you'd be able to follow. Thought I'd shaken you. But you're persistent.
Was that something conflicted in his voice when he talked about her? Lannery could not tell. He had changed so much, and she knew that without even seeing him. In the distance, a deep rumble.
What was that?
Where is Tree? She remembered his scream, guessed he was dead, and felt a surprising sadness. Tree was not a good Twi'lek, but he was trying to make himself better. Trying to make up for his past. Lannery opened her eyes again and looked at her brother. He was blurry to begin with, swaying in her vision like a scar serpent waiting to strike. She closed one eye and her sight settled. Dale manifested, down on one knee before her as if questioning one of the elder gods.
You've grown up,
Lannery whispered. Dale laughed. She recognized the sound, but there was something grating in it. Something mad. And he had grown up. Gone were his boyish good looks, replaced by a weathered countenance that carried every day of every year that had passed. He'd lost some of his hair, and what remained was speckled gray. There was a scar on his left cheek. He could have done something about the hair and scar, but she saw no vanity in him at all. No evidence of self-awareness about his appearance. His robe was plain and rough. Everything that Dale was now resided in his mad, glittering eyes. Another thud. She felt it through her behind rather than heard it. Dale glanced up at the ceiling.
I've grown in every way, he said. See?
Feel,
I don't want to...
But I'm telling you to!
He screamed. Lannery winced as his voice seared into her head, driving spikes of pain into her eyeballs. Perhaps she'd fractured her skull. She tried to feel, to sense, as they'd taught her in Maharakesh when she finished her great journey without her brother. But she was confused. The force flowed through her, but it seemed to stutter. She could not examine herself, so instead she delved toward Dale's mind. And withdrew just as quickly. He grinned, nodding slowly.
You see?
He asked.
You feel?
Lannery nodded, tides of pain washing through her. She sensed nothing at all of the force within him. No light, no dark, no Ashlaw, no Bogan. But he bore an incredible strength that she had only just started to recognize 9 years before. It had grown into something solid. She could only call it madness. And yet Dale's aims and ambitions were defined, and his route to achieving them firmly set. His madness had method.
Not many people are completely without your force, eh, Lannery? Not many. Not him.
He nodded toward a corner, and Lannery looked, relieved to see Tree propped there. He bled from a wound across his forehead and left eye, and twitched in unconsciousness.
Not even most of my stargazers.
There were three other people around the room now, other than the Cell-Calf technicians. They were of differing species, but all dressed similar to Dale. Their look resembled that of a religious order, but they were much more than that. And few religions went that heavily armed. Not many people want to be, Lannery said.
See, that's why you didn't find me, Dale said. Down there in that old dark place. Because you were looking the wrong way. You were searching as if I'd lost something and fled, not found something and set off on my own path. You were looking for a wounded, dying animal, not the man I've become.
I was looking for my brother, and I've already told you. You left the brother you always wanted back in Bodhi with our parents.
He's dead now. Long dead.
There was another distant impact, and Lannery absorbed it. Examined it. She was more conscious and aware now. She thought it was an explosion. What's happening? She asked. Dale stood and approached the covered object on the table. It was the size of a Nogri's head, and beneath the sheet it appeared completely spherical.
It's almost finished,
he said.
Almost ready. You know what this is?
Yes, Lannery said, bluffing. She knew his aims, and what he planned to use to make them real. But really, she had no idea what the device was. Dale rested his hand on the object almost reverentially.
Everything I always wanted.
He whispered it almost to himself. Dale, shut up! He didn't even look at her as he spoke, and a sudden change came over him.
You're sure?
He asked the group huddled in the corner.
You're certain?
Yes, one of the technicians said.
He took one step forward.
Your request was, forgive me, vague. We've worked hard. It was a task we relished. And the device is ready to do everything you want of it. It's perfect. One of the finest of our creations. And it pushes at the edge of all our accumulated science. Once it's charged,
enough,
Dale said, holding up a hand. He glanced at Lannery. You have no idea what you're doing, she said.
And you have no idea what I've seen.
He nodded at his stargazers.
The violence was sudden and shocking. The stargazers, a human, a Twi'lek, and a Cathar, drew blasters and power bows and opened fire on the scientists.
Lannery winced but watched, unable to close her eyes. The Cell-Caths danced and juddered as blasts and bolts ripped into them. Blood splashed, fire sizzled across skin, clothes erupted into flames. In the space of 5 heartbeats, the scientists were dead, the last one sliding down the wall to slump across her murdered companions.
Calm,
Lannery told herself.
Calm.
And she sought the Force, readying to use it to save herself. The time must come soon. She had to stop him here and now, and nothing here would end well. Dale looked at Lannery. She could not read his eyes. She felt for her sword, but the scabbard was empty. And now me, she thought. Panic came, and she washed it away, seeking the familiar Force to prime herself for action. But her pain was still raw, and shock stoked the storms and uncertainties inside her.
You'd lose, Dale said. Maybe you'd take a couple of us with you, but my stargazers are ready for you. The first touch on their mind and a blaster would open your skull, or a power bolt would cook your heart.
Lannery breathed long and slow, and the moment stretched on.
I wish, Dale said.
She looked for weakness, but saw none. He was expressing frustration, not regret.
Wish what? I wish you'd understood. I wish you could have opened your mind to our past. Your Force is so constricting. You think it gives you power. You're taught that it's great, but it binds you. You're blinkered by it, but my eyes are wide open. We see the stars. We have a place in the universe that was taken from us by the Thoyor. They stole us away, brought us here, denied us the future we deserved. And I'm going to take it back.
You'll kill everyone.
No, Dale said, smiling. I know what I'm doing.
Dark matter? Gree technology, Dale? You're playing with something beyond anything we can even hope to understand. Lannery nodded at the bodies still steaming and twitching in the corner. You heard them. Even they said that thing is at the edge of known science, and edges break away.
Gather it up, Dale said to his stargazers.
He turned his back on Lannery. There was another explosion somewhere far away. Dale, what have you done? She asked. She stood slowly, holding onto a wheeled tool cart for support. The Cathar watched her, his gun at the ready.
Started a little fight.
Dale turned to face her again. For an instant, she felt a flush of memories, but they were all good ones of her time with her brother. They did not belong here. With whom?
I arranged that the Newell Tandor Dome would find out about Pan Deep's continuing business with the Jedi, and they hate them. Many survivors from the bombed domes live there now. Landed one of my stargazers there, and by now she'll have killed several of their corporation's presidents with a Jedi sword.
Where did you get? Lannery asked, but then it fell into place.
Kara. Greenwood Station will be blamed for the murders, and its alliance with the Jedi, Dale said, his expression unchanging. Skirmishes are common on Nox, and it won't be the first conflict between Newell Tandor and another dome.
Covering your tracks, Lannery said. Dale shrugged. Behind him, his stargazers had wrapped the device in the sheet. It did not seem at all heavy, and the Twi'lek held it to her chest. They were waiting for Dale to leave.
Just like you did on Tython,
Lannery continued. One hand delved into her utility belt beneath the robe, rolling the item she sought between thumb and forefinger. A tracker, small and sharp. Leaving your bloodied clothes for me to find. Letting our family believe you dead.
I liked being dead, Dale said. It gave me freedom from your constant efforts to push the Force on me when I never, ever wanted it.
Another low rumble and a vibration from above.
Soon I'll be believed dead again and gone from here. Free to pursue my own fate.
Dale, you don't know what...
I should kill you.
Dale pulled a blaster from beneath his robe and stood with it pointing down at the floor. He was incredibly still, like a statue. Even his eyes seemed to have died.
He's inside,
Lannery thought, and she wondered what he was finding in there, what he was thinking and the decisions he was making, and she knew that now was the time to push. She would push hard and violently, smashing aside those mental defenses he might believe he had built against her.
But I can't, Dale said.
He turned aside and holstered his blaster. Lannery brought out her hand and flicked the tracker, closing her eyes, concentrating, and guiding it quickly across the room until it attached to Dale's right boot. Then she opened her eyes and looked around, but no one had seen anything. Perhaps she had been lucky. Perhaps. Dale did not even spare her a final glance. With a single nod at the Cathar, he left the room the same way Lannery and Tree had entered. The Twi'lek carrying the device followed, along with the human stargazer. The Cathar remained, gun aimed at Lannery. It was a heavy blaster, and its muzzle still glowed warm. Lannery clenched her fingers, readying a force punch. "Try," the Cathar said. "You know I can't just stand here and let him leave."
"You won't be standing there for long."
Lannery twitched her finger, and a tool flipped from the wide table, clanging against the wall. The stargazer didn't even blink.
"He doesn't want to hear you die,"
the Cathar said. "That's kind of my brother."
"He is kind. The only kind man I've ever met."
Lannery glanced at the huddled, bloody bodies in the corner.
"They were unkind," the Cathar said. "They hid down here instead of looking to the stars."
She sensed movement from the other side of the room. She did not look, but she knew that Tree was stirring. "He's going to kill everyone," she said. "Once he initiates that device, the dark matter will form a black hole and everyone in the system..."
"He knows that won't happen. The stars call," they tell him.
"Oh, so the stars speak to him," Lannery said, laughing softly. "And he's not mad?"
The Cathar blinked slowly, but she was not even putting a chink in his convictions. "Come on, Tree," she thought. Tree groaned. The Cathar glanced his way. Lannery force-shoved with everything she had. Tools and loose components rattled across the table and flew at the stargazer. A cabinet tipped and bounced across the floor. A hail of bolts and snipped wires became a stinging rain that raked across his chest and face, ripping skin and blinding him. She ducked down and force-punched, shoving the Cathar back against the wall beside the door. His blaster fired, the shot smashing a hole in the ceiling. Molten material and rock fragments showered down. Then the stargazer clasped at his belt, weeping blood from ruptured eyes, and a look of ecstasy broke across his face. "Oh no," Lannery muttered. She looked at Tree and saw that he was barely conscious, and with every shred of strength and effort she had of the Force, she reached for him and dragged him halfway across the room toward her. His eyes opened comically wide as he slid without being touched, and as he reached her and she clasped his clothing, Lannery shouted, "Bomb!" The explosion was deafening, shattering, assaulting her body and mind and senses, and she felt herself thrown around like a snowflake in a storm. With her parents, it was the arts. Her mother wrote the most beautiful poetry, and her father was a sculptor, his work venerated all across Mycera. But Lannery's calling lay in science and alchemy, and how the Force could be used for both. She discovers that at O'Neill Kesh, and she revels in it. Master Dan Powell shows her the way. The Cathar Temple Master has taught at O'Neill Kesh for 16 years, and at the end of their first long night of discussion, she tells Lannery that she has the potential to be her greatest pupil. "Do you say that to everyone?" Lannery asks, proud but suspicious.
"I've said it to no one before," Dan Powell replies.
Over the next few days, the studies begin, and Lannery is amazed. She immerses herself in Dan Powell's instruction, and in doing so, her troubles with Dale fade away. They don't disappear completely. There is always a shadow and a sense of impending change in her life. But she sleeps better than she has since leaving home, feels happier, and realizes that her mind has always been too focused on her brother. Dan Powell makes her understand that this is her great journey as well. And though Lannery cannot give up on Dale, for the first time, she places herself before him. With the chasm beneath them, O'Neill Kesh has a different feel from all the other temples. Every moment there is rich, filled with potential, and edged with a sense of danger. Lannery has never felt so alive. It is as if the cells of her body are charged, her mind on fire. When she mentions this, Dan Powell smiles and nods.
We balance on the precipice of knowledge, she says. The unknown lies below us, always threatening to draw us down or rise up and swallow us. The force is charged and powerful here. Anyone familiar can feel and sense it, but if you're powerful with the force...
She grimaces and presses a fist to her forehead.
Sometimes it hurts, but it's a hurt worth weathering.
Dan Powell introduces her to sciences that Lannery has only ever heard or read about. She knows of Jedi who are disturbed by some of what occurs at Anil Kesh, but she listens to the Master wide-eyed and with an open mind. She finds plenty to concern her, but so much more that fascinates. She's aware of Dan Powell's watching her carefully, taking stock. She is eager to please. In the storage pens in one of the temple's supporting arms are the altered animals. Taken from the Abyss of Ru, a dangerous place deep in the rift 600 kilometers to the east, these strange and fearsome creatures have been genetically manipulated using the Force to serve the Jedi. Lannery is amazed at the changes in them. None are hurt or damaged, and it's as if their alterations are the true wish of evolution. Dan Powell takes her through a network of laboratories. In one, weapons are altered and adapted using force-driven metallurgy. In another, weapons specific to the Force are being tested. Chemicals are changed and transmuted. Solids have their structures reformed. And the wild power of the chasm beneath them is harnessed in thick-walled compounds, dancing and flashing, striking and snapping like a living thing. It is in the last room that Dan Powell shows her that Lannery knows her future lies. The talents needed for this are deep, the Jedi Master says. The risks great, but the rewards are huge. I'm going to teach you. Lannery stares at the two Jedi in the center of the room. Before each of them is a shape. Something that should not live, yet it flexes and breathes. A thing that should not be, yet here it is. Wrought from their own flesh and blood, Dan Powell says, and nurtured using the Force. Lannery is terrified and thrilled. She has heard of this, but never thought it was true. Never suspected she would see it for herself. The alchemy of flesh, she whispers. Despite her fear, she is eager to begin.
Tell me you can get us out of here.
Tree's voice. His urgency pulled her quickly back to her senses. That and the stench of sewage and death. Everything ached, and in a few places she hurt terribly. Her head still throbbed as if someone were jumping up and down on it. She smelled blood and knew it was her own. But Tree was far from gentle as he grabbed her beneath the armpits and tried to haul her upright. Lannery shoved him back and sent him stumbling into the shattered table. She looked around and tried to take stock. It looked bad. The Cathar Stargazer had exploded his suicide vest, demolishing the wall and bringing down most of the ceiling. The doorway was blocked by torn metal and smashed stone, and fractured rock had fallen behind it. The rest of the ceiling was spattered with his blood, a great swath of it burned black by the bomb's fire flash. The remainder of the large room was a mess. Scientists' bodies scattered from the corner where they'd been massacred. Tools and components everywhere. The large central table ruptured and splintered. If she hadn't pulled Tree behind there with her, they'd have both died. There was a wide crack in one wall, and through this seeped a steady stream of effluent. A pipe or chute had been ruptured somewhere, and the leak was speeding up rather than slowing down.
Look, Tree said, pointing. Another door there!
He was almost shouting, and blood ran from his ears. Lannery also heard the fading whine from her tortured eardrums, but that was the least of her worries.
That Cathar's bomb can't have done that, she said, pointing at the rent in the wall.
It was on the opposite side of the room from the doorway the explosion had blocked.
There was another explosion when I was trying to wake you, Tree said. Far away! Up there!
To feel it down here, it must have been big. What's happening? What if we started?
A war. And Dale started it. Come on, we've got to stop him leaving Greenwood Station.
I feel sick,
Tree said.
It stinks. My head hurts. I think my skull might be...
I'll break it myself, Lannery said. Come on, help me with this door.
She searched the room for her sword, knowing she would not find it, mourning its loss. Tem Madog himself had forged that sword for her. She'd rather have lost an arm. Perhaps it had been dropped somewhere beyond that blocked doorway. Or maybe Dale had taken it with him. They tried the door, but it was electronically locked.
Cover your ears, Lannery said.
She concentrated on the lock and force-shoved, crushing the mechanism and shorting the circuits. The door slid open, and a flood of sewage washed in around their feet. She and Tree clasped hands to keep their balance.
The thought of falling into that mess.
When the levels of filth had equalized, they left the room and emerged into one of Pan Deep's corridors. It was long and empty, and several other doors led off it. They were all closed, marked only with laboratory numbers, and Lannery had no wish to open them. Soft, reactive lighting glowed behind ceiling panels, and on the walls were touch panels, 3D hollow screens, and several indentations that might have housed implement printers. This was advanced tech for a place so hidden away. The money pumped into Pan Deep must have been vast. They saw no one else. Perhaps the 6 murdered scientists were the only ones who worked here. Or maybe Dale had paid others to stay away. Not much of a head start, she thought. But he'll know his way up. Would have an escape route planned from here and from the city. She could barely believe the enormity of the events that Dale had set in motion. Initiating a battle between 2 domes, cities whose specialty was the design and manufacture of weapons of war, was as good as murdering the battle's victims himself. All to cover his tracks. It was brutal. It was inhuman. He claimed freedom from the Force, but willingly removing himself from its influence had made him a monster. Pan Deep was not as large as she'd imagined. At the end of the corridor, they emerged into a rough cavern, at the other end of which a string of lights led into a tunnel that sloped slowly upward. The cavern floor was swilling with sewage, and the stink was almost unbearable, but Lannery knew that a person could get used to a lot in extreme circumstances. Even Tree was surprising her. He'd quickly stopped complaining and wiped the blood from his face and ears, and now he nudged her shoulder and pointed.
Think he'll have set traps?
He thinks we're dead, she said. Another blast rumbled down from above, spilling grit and dust from the cavern ceiling. From somewhere close by came a shattering, grinding crack, shaking the floor and setting the air itself vibrating. And we don't have time for caution, Lannery said. I think they're using plasma bombs up there. We've got to get clear of Greenwood Station and back to the Peacemaker, or this will be our grave.
Laid to rest in a bath of shack, Tree said. Well, I guess I had it coming.
Lannery laughed out loud. Tree's eyes went wide with surprise. And then they ran. It was a journey through a nightmare. Flowing sewage, crumbling walls, 3 security grills that Lannery had to force shove open before they could continue. And what made it worse was the uncertainty of what they were moving toward. The farther they went, the louder the noises of battle. But they had little choice. Frustration and fear drove her on. Not fear for herself so much as for the countless people who Dale's scheme would put at risk, and not only those now dying in the conflict initiated here. Seeing the shape of the device beneath the dust sheet had been strange, that something so small might contain such energies. The pursuit had clouded her thoughts about the Hypergate, and the truth or not of its existence. But seeing Dale again, and his madness, and being so close to the device that might be born of Gree technology, had all combined to focus her thoughts. It was just possible that the device would work, which would be amazing, and the consequences of that she could not allow herself to consider. But it was much more likely that it would doom them all. The farther they fled from beneath the massive tower's foundation, the greater the impact of the explosions. When she reached her peacemaker, she would contact the Jedi Council and tell them of events here, and maybe they could intervene in time to prevent a greater tragedy. But doing so might be admitting their continued interest in Greenwood Station and the laboratories and expertise of Pan Deep. Perhaps they would be happier to let the domed city meet its fate and fade away from memory. Their route took them upward, and Tree commented several times that they should have already reached street level. But they had no time to pause, and when Lannery consulted her wrist unit, the schematics were confused. She could not pin down their location on the plans. People passed by them in both directions, none sparing them a glance. They were all wide-eyed and scared. At last, they reached a set of heavy blast doors. Lannery used the Force to fry their controls, and Tree found a heavy iron bar to pry them open. Heat and noise flooded in, the stenches and sounds of chaos, and Lannery stumbled through onto a wide balcony several stories above the ground. They had emerged just above the base of the central tower, overlooking Greenwood Station's western side. The sounds, sights, and chaos of war were almost overwhelming. They were confronted with a scene that took their breaths away. Chapter 14. Sad History.
Perhaps there is a madness in remaining on Typhon while not strong in the Force. One would not submerge long beneath the surface of the sea if one did not possess gills. One would surface. One would escape. So to stay here now, that way, insanity lies.
Unknown Typhon, circa 9,000 TYA, Thoyor arrival. When Master Dan Powell knocks on her door and disturbs her from sleep, Lannery knows that something is wrong. She has been expecting it. Like the sense of imminent danger always apparent at Anil Kesh because of the chasm below, her own perception of Dale has been of a coiled spring. Now the time has come. Dale has sprung.
"He's a fool,"
Dan Powell says as they march along the corridor.
"I saw trouble in him the moment you arrived,